Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be rejoined today by Katie Rich, who is awards editor at The Ankler. Everybody loves The Ankler. Go sign up for The Ankler. It's your one-stop shop for Hollywood entertainment news reporting and gossip and industry stuff. You get entertainment strategy guy. You get Richard Rushfield, of course, the first guest on this show.
The Ankler. He is The Ankler.
The Ankler. He is Mr. Ankler. And we are joined for the first time today by Christopher Rosen, who is deputy editor at The Ankler. You guys are working together on Ankler Pundits and Prestige Junkie. Thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, thanks for having me for the first time. And I love that was a great plug. I'm like, you, the check's in the mail.
Sunday. I know.
I was a day one subscriber to The Ankler when it hit, before Substack even. I was there before.
Wow.
You know, so
you and me both, I think.
It's been a long journey. I love to see what Richard and Janice are building over there. So let's talk awards season. Let's talk Ankler Pundits, first of all, because you guys have made the very serious mistake of including me in your panel of experts for the awards season prediction game that you guys kind of run. And I'm just want to set the stage here. I'm very bad at this portion of the awards season where people are picking nominees, not necessarily picking winners. I'm a little better at picking winners. I'm no David Poland, but I am a little bit better at picking the winners. But the nominee part really trips me up. And Katie, I was telling you this earlier today. I have in my list of nominations Amy Madigan from Weapons, who I think has a shot, but is very much a borderline, like maybe supporting actress nominee in the Oscars. Who knows? It's not at the top of a lot of people's charts. I have her at the top of my charts because I want to manifest this. I want this thing to happen. I want her to get an Oscar nomination for her role in Weapons, a movie that, because it is horror, because it is genre, because it came out a little earlier in the year, has a good chance of kind of being forgotten at this stage in the awards season. When you are making your picks, Katie, how do you balance that desire between like what the change you want to see in the world and the world as you see it? Because it's the trickiest thing.
It is such a great question. And I think it's such a judgment call for everyone who's filling it out. Like I recently went back. I was just looking, I had your page pulled up, Sunny, and you have Amy Madigan in fifth spot on yours. So
I updated it this morning. Okay. It takes a little time for it to go through.
I'm glad to still see her there. We're going to discuss why Emily Blunt is still on your rundown. We'll get there. But I got back from the Middleburg Film Festival this past weekend and had just been talking to people there, been reading reviews, and just felt like Frankenstein was really ascendant, the Guillermo del Toro movie. And I said, okay, I got to make room for this in my best picture lineup. Like it seems clear the Frankenstein is really going places. And I was looking at what I was going to kick out, and I have been doggedly sticking by Train Dreams, a movie that I love. And I think Netflix is pushing. I think they're doing a good job by it. I think it has this emotional tug that would be really strong. And the obvious thing for me to do would be to swap Train Dreams for Frankenstein. They're both from the same distributor, but I wouldn't do it. So I kicked out Jay Kelly instead, which I don't know if that was a good idea. So that's me in real time trying to balance what I think is actually happening and recognizing that the people who vote for these awards and the people who campaign for these awards look at the stuff we're doing because nobody knows anything. Everyone is just guessing. But if enough of us guess the same thing, they'll start thinking it's true. So if I stand by Train Dreams, it sends a ripple out into the world that is not insignificant. And I think it is worth doing more of the hopeful stuff than the hard, cold reality at this point, because, again, nobody actually knows what's going to happen.
Christopher, this is the real problem here. We are like Heisenberg's uncertainty pundits. We are like we cannot observe this thing without changing it. But once we change it, we have altered the course of what is happening. How do you balance that?
I think of it like just going off what Katie was saying and what you were saying. For me, there is some responsibility there in terms of like, well, if people are looking at this, then we have to take it somewhat seriously, and we don't really know because we're just guessing like everybody else. But that said, I do think like the people voting for these awards, certainly in the Academy, they're in the industry, but they're also just like people who watch movies and they have their passions and they pick those passions. So like Amy Madigan, I also have I'm very bullish on this because I loved her in the movie. And I think a lot of people did. And when it comes to nominations, I don't think she's going to win an Oscar, though we could argue whether that's deserved or not.
Best supporting actress is still wide open, so don't rule anything out.
But just in terms of like getting her nominated, I think a lot of people, and Katie and I have talked about this a lot on our pod, but it's like, you know who I really loved? Like Katie, you've said you want to get t-shirts printed of this. You know who I really loved? Because like that is how people talk about these things. And I think you would hear a lot of, you know who I really loved is Amy Madigan. So I always think of it like trying to, like my, if my, like I won't go too far afield from, like I'm not going to put like, I don't even know. This year, I feel like a lot of the movies I like happen to be the top movies, like One Battle. And but I'm not going to put K-pop Demon Hunters in for Best Picture. Let's say that, which I really loved. And I would actually, on my own personal ballot, put it in for Best Picture. But I don't think it's going to get in for Best Picture. So I won't go that far. But I do try to like balance. I think your passions are not unique in terms of like you could see like Jacob Elordi, like Katie was saying, or Amy Madigan, these people where they're you're getting an organic response to them. And that's how you kind of get into an Oscar race and an eventual nomination.
And then the thing that I have learned over and over again is that organic response from the likes of us and even from the industry and even from audiences can only go so far. Like Challengers last year, I feel like I was not the only person trying to push that boulder up a hill. It was such a beloved movie. It was a hit. It was liked by the industry. It had hot. It had every single possible thing going for it, I guess, except that it was fun and it came out in the spring. And no amount of me putting Mike Feist on my supporting actor predictions could get it there. So there's only so much advocacy you could do, even for something that feels like it's more of a contender than K-pop Demon Hunters. Sometimes you run into that wall.
You mentioned earlier Netflix and, you know, measuring Train Dreams versus Frankenstein. And when I am putting together my best picture list, I always think in terms at least one of the spots, there's a Netflix spot. They tend to have at least one big movie, you know, sometimes multiple, but usually there's like one big Netflix movie that everybody kind of focuses on. And I have steered away from Frankenstein, not because I haven't seen or well, because I haven't seen it. Like maybe I watch it and it's amazing and it blows me away.
To theaters now.
Yes, it's kind of in theaters now. It's kind of in theaters now.
What Netflix will proudly tell you that they put their Oscar contenders in theaters for a run for a couple of weeks, and then it's on Netflix forever.
Sure. But for me, I wound up going with. I did not go with Frankenstein because I assume that the genre spot is going to be taken up by Sinners. I think Sinners is going to kind of suck up the genre energy in the race for there. And I went with A House of Dynamite. But then there's Train Dreams, which is, you know, kind of a more standard Oscar type. When you're putting together your list, do you think like this in terms of distributors? And do you make a specific exemption spot for Netflix, which has kind of evolved into this like weirdly, like every year it feels like they have a movie where that gets 10 to 12 nominations, even if it doesn't win that many.
I think it's the opposite of a Netflix exemption, though, because they keep not winning Best Picture. They keep putting a ton of money into movies that could win Best Picture. And they haven't gotten more than two nominees in the Best Picture 10, even when it seemed really possible that they could. I'm not sure anyone has done it in quite a while. Chris, you might have that stat more handy than I do. And I think the Netflix resentment in the industry is really real. You know, they basically swallowed the industry whole. Theatrical windows are a big thing. They're not paying artists the way that they used to when they were just throwing, you know, millions and millions of dollars at Alfonso Cuarón. And I think everyone has this thing of being like, you've got enough. You've got all your money. We don't have to fall all over ourselves for J.K. Kelly on your behalf. So I think that Netflix has a lot of contenders in there, but I think Neon or A24 in a different year or something might be the ones I would give kind of an extra shine to, because they're the ones that seem to be courting this part of the industry even more.
Yeah.
I think of the distributors in terms of like their track record and like what they have versus like what. So Netflix, I do have Frankenstein in, but I don't have any of these other movies in. Now, if you told me like they got three movies in or two, I guess I wouldn't be that surprised. But I have like two focus movies in for now with like Hamnet and Begonia, which I'm still going for. I have an A24 in, a few Neons. And I always keep going back to like some of these studios with a historic track record, like Searchlight. I'm always like, well, I should have them in there, right? Because they've had so much success in the Oscar race, but like last year, I don't think their best bet was like A Real Pain, which I think I ended up probably predicting to get in, and it missed for Best Picture, even though it had like a couple of other nominations and an actual win. And so this year I'm like, trying to figure out, like, do I want to put, like, is this thing on in there? Or Rental Family before the season, maybe I would have had in there as a Searchlight representative. So it is tricky. I do think of it in terms of the distributors. And Netflix, I will always hold for. And this year, I feel like they obviously will get, I would, if they don't get one of these movies in, I mean, that would be, frankly, just shocking to me. Not even, wild. Like, I mean, they're all, like, they're all in contention in terms of what their priority would be. I don't know. I think Frankenstein maybe is elevating above the others, and we'll see if Train Dreams can have like a late push or like kind of keep going back in terms of like the enthusiasm, because obviously people who like it really, really like it. And just getting more people to like it, I think, is the goal.
I would throw out distributor wise too, is that we sleep on Sony Pictures Classics this time of year, but last year they got a surprise best picture nomination with I'm Still Here, and Fernanda Torres got in for best actress, and those guys are kind of always around and you can't ever rule them out. And honestly, I just said that out loud and I realized I don't think Nuremberg's going to be it. And I don't know if they've got another one, but there's smaller ones too that have a really good track record with voters that aren't as visible to the general public, I don't think.
Yeah. All right. Let's, speaking of the general public, the main reason I wanted to get you guys on today, well, we're going to talk about specific Oscar picks here in a minute, because I want you guys to rip my list apart. But the reason we talk about Oscar season and the reason the industry hypes Oscar season is because this is the time of year when the more serious, the more adult-minded fare gets released, the things, the movies that bring, you know, the adult audiences to theaters, right? This is the good time of year, theoretically, for movies. I have too many things to watch. I already have too many things to watch. I can't imagine what it's like for a normal person who doesn't do this for a living.
Or how about the people who vote on the Oscars and have real jobs that take them on movie sets, and then they're somehow expected to watch all this?
Yeah, well, they get the apps, they get the streamer apps, which they religiously watch. They watch all of the titles, so they can vote in an educated way.
Right? Yeah, isn't that right?
There. Yeah, they're required to say that they watched everything, but they don't get extra hours in the day any more than the rest of us, as far as I know.
Yeah. So let's talk about what people should have their eyes on. Let's start with Hamnet, which I think is getting a lot of buzz kind of all the way around, and is I think still a little under the radar for your average general audience.
Yeah, it hasn't come out yet. I think it's out in early November or maybe late November even. But it's been making its way across a bunch of regional film festivals. I always want to kind of hammer that there are regional film festivals all over the country right now. I was just in Middleburg, Virginia. Chris and I are going to be at the Denver Film Festival in a couple weeks. So if you were in the continental U.S., the odds are that there is a festival near you in the months of October and November playing a bunch of this stuff early. So it's really more accessible than I think it can feel sometimes. But so I saw Hamnet again at Middleburg. I think I love that movie very deeply. It was kind of the runaway hit of Telluride in Toronto, the festivals that Chris and I were at in early September. I think the field has gotten a little bit more diffuse since then. One Battle After Another came out right after it. We can talk about that in a second, I assume. Mm-hmm. But it's an incredibly powerful movie. And I think maybe its strongest weapon, and Chris, you see if you agree with me, is that everyone seems to think that Jessie Buckley is running away with Best Actress. I agree. Having seen it a second time, I think that performance is pretty undeniable. So I think even if some bigger movies like One Battle or Sinners kind of take some of its attention away, it's got one major Oscar win basically in the bag.
And it's also like, you know, it's like a classic for regular people going to the movies. I feel like this is a classic, like, like a Shakespearean adaptation that you would have seen, like, you know, it's obviously like not, it's not like Shakespeare in Love, certainly, and certainly much more dramatic. But I mean, if you're thinking about it, like for a regular person going to the movies, like this is like the kind of maybe movie you would have seen in the 90s and gone to the local theater and really enjoyed, you know, that kind of thing. So I'll be curious to see if people nowadays, all these numbers are. Obviously, we both all know, like, the numbers are not the same as they once were in terms of getting people mm-hmm. to the movies. But I do think this one has the potential to do, like, okay in the current landscape. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it'll be, like, a runaway hit. But if you told me this ended up grossing, like, Conclave money, I wouldn't be totally shocked. And that's also a, obviously, a Focus movie. So,
yeah,
they know how to, like, market these to grown-ups. And while this is definitely not as saucy as Conclave was, I do think it has the same kind of potential.
No bitchy cardinals this time around.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's not as much papal drama in this. I finally saw the so I avoid watching trailers at my house as best as I can. I did finally see a trailer for Hamnet. Finally, pretty close to when it's coming out, Which,
well, and that
again,
trailer,
like,
is relatively new, and I, you know, it gives away a lot of the movie. So I'm sorry that you avoided the trailer and then got a ton of information in one second.
Yeah, it's that's too. But it does feel a little bit like. It feels a little bit like gut punch Shakespeare in Love. Like, that is what I was like, oh, I could definitely see, boy, I don't know. I was like, oh, yeah, I see this. Oh, boy, this is going to be sad. This is going to be a sad one.
It's definitely sad.
But my defense of the trailer that gives away too much, and we talked about this on our Prestige Junkie After Party, is that, you know, not only do audiences kind of want to know what they're getting in for, you know, cinema scores are going to be high if it's a movie that they expect, but there's an uplift to Hamnet. It's not just big, sad feelings about a dead kid. Like, there's this thread through it of how you use art to kind of pull yourself out of something like that. It's about the writing of Hamlet. You know, not all of us make art like Hamlet when we're going through tough times, but Shakespeare did. You want to get that element. You leave that theater feeling really moved, and there's like a huge catharsis with it. And that is a huge part of the power of that movie. And I think hopefully that's what will convince people to go see it, that they're not just going to leave feeling really bummed out.
And I guess the last thing I would say on that, too, is that, like, we've seen getting people to come out for original movies is not easy, right? Like, it's a challenge. The success of Warner Brothers this year, notwithstanding, a lot of these movies, like, this is an original. Well, it's an adaptation, but it is also it's Shakespeare's the most recognizable IP, I would argue, maybe. So it's like you'll at least have people with a built-in awareness of like who they're seeing here, and like kind of get that in the latest trailer too, that it is like. A Hamlet ad, you know what I mean? Like, you get, I think she looks at the program in the trailer, right? Isn't that like a scene? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I do think that that'll help get people, if not thrilled to go see this, like go out to see it. It's definitely not, we've seen a lot of, especially in award season, you see a lot of tragedy porn, and like, this is not that, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So I do think like people will, like regular audiences will come out for it. And just like, while the festivals are never super indicative of the real world, I would say like it won the audience award at TIFF, which is the most like real audiences that you can get in that space. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like that is like a very mainstream, very broad, huge festival with all types there. And typically the audience award winner is something like The Life of Chuck or American Fiction, which are these bigger kind of movies. And Hamnet won there, which I think is a great show of strength for how it will play with real audiences.
And it's also directed by Chloe Zhao. So there's an Oscar pedigree there for her work in Nomadland, and I think the writer was got some nominations.
I don't think the writer did, but no, Nomadland was a huge Oscar thing. It's funny, if you want to the Shakespeare in Love to Saving Private Ryan Oscar race comparisons, we're going very nerdy, but if you want to compare those two, Chloe Zhao is the Steven Spielberg of the situation, and that she won Best Director not that long ago. So you know, just Oscar precedence all the way down.
Well, who is, so then who would be the other? Is it Paul Thomas Anderson?
One battle after another would be the Saving Private Ryan in this admittedly strained metaphor, but one that I like anyway.
Well, let's hop over to One Battle After Another, which I think more audiences, more listeners will be familiar with. It's big movie. It's got stars Leonardo DiCaprio. It's got a big rollout, IMAX, etc. That does seem to kind of have the momentum right now, but has that been blunted at all by the you know, kind of soft box office?
I don't know, Chris, do you think it's soft for what it is?
I mean, I would say no. I don't think it's been blunted at all. I think for what it is, I think it's done really well, and it's done better than Flower Moon did, and it'll be the biggest Paul Thomas Anderson movie, and maybe it gets to like, I mean, what are we realistically going to say? Like, could it get to $200 million worldwide? That still would be like not a great number for how much it costs, but if you told me a Paul Thomas Anderson movie that was deeply in indebted to Thomas Pynchon grossed $200 million around the world, I'd be like, man, that's pretty great. Leonardo DiCaprio or not. So I don't think it's with all the enthusiasm there. The thing I'm always reticent of in these races, and like we're talking about this, it's only October. We've been talking about One Battle After Another since September. I mean, it's a long time. The Oscars aren't, the nominations are not until January. The show is not until March. Like, can it hold that momentum or come back on the momentum, or will people just be like, I'm kind of over that movie because we already talked about it to death for 3 months, and maybe there's something newer or shinier that I will really like. It's, to me, it's not like an Oppenheimer where it's an undeniable front runner where we had that movie just like, here, made almost $1 billion, everyone really loved it, we know it's going to win a bunch of Oscars, and then it just does. I don't think One Battle is like that, but I do think it's a very strong front runner at the moment.
But and I also think that Paul Thomas Anderson is a very Nolan-like figure, even if the movie is not quite Oppenheimer. He's been nominated for, what, 11 Oscars and has never won, which just feels really wild at this point. And it's not like he's somebody who, like, the Oscars I've never really gotten. You know, like, Kelly Reichert has a new movie out this year called The Mastermind that I love. I'm waiting for the Oscars to pay attention to her. Not sure it'll ever happen. Paul Thomas Anderson is on their radar. He's in the club in some way, maybe not quite as, like, as an industry titan as Nolan, who has obviously made a lot of people a lot of money. But he is just so obviously overdue and has made one of the best movies of his career. So I think even if the Best Picture race is not over, and what Chris is saying about, you know, momentum feeling, you have to build momentum again. I know I keep saying this, but Sinners came out earlier in this year. In the year, it's going to start coming back in a big way. I think we're going to talk about Sinners a lot more than we are right now. But I do think Anderson in Best Director feels pretty undeniable to me for just the reputation that he has. Like, it feels like his time, even if it's not the movie's time overall.
Yeah, that all tracks. Speaking of people who are in the club and have you know gotten their nominations. Let's talk Yorgos Lanthimos for a second, because we've got a new Yorgos movie coming out, Begonia, which you watch the trailer and okay, it's like, oh, this is interesting. It's weird. Emma Stone, Jesse Plemons. This looks kind of interesting. What's going on in it? And he is the sort of director who he always sneaks up on me, because I did not expect The Favorite to do what it did at the Oscars or the box office, frankly. And then Poor Things, kind of same thing. I did not think that movie would hit quite as hard as it did. He is back with another one. Do we think that movie is kind of, I can't get a feel for the buzz on that one. What is the buzz on that one like?
Chris, you've seen it. Yeah.
I've seen it. Sonny, have you seen it yet? You haven't gotten to see
it? I've not seen it. This is another reason this is all very, I'm sorry, I'm going to complain here for a minute. These lists is very hard for me because I don't see all these movies.
You got to guess.
But you don't need to see it.
I haven't seen half of what I'm predicting. Come on.
You don't need to see it. I have seen this. I saw this at Telluride and I do want to see it again, which I think is indicative of, I think it's pretty good. I do find it like a great, it's a, to me, it's not as mainstream as I think. I'm of the opinion that Poor Things is mostly mainstream, and I think The Favorite is too in its own weird way. And like something like Kinds of Kindness or The Lobster, less mainstream. And I feel like this is like kind of in the middle, where it is this very funny, like cockeyed, like black comedy, where you have Jesse Plemons playing a conspiracy theorist who has no discernible ideology, but maybe all the ideologies, who kidnaps a girl boss CEO played by Emma Stone because he thinks she's an alien who is maybe going to destroy the whole world. And it's very, very funny. And I think if you are amused by the culture wars in the that you see online every day, you will probably find this pretty funny. I'll be curious to see how it plays at the box office. I mean, Poor Things grossed like $34 million in North America, I think. And that's good, you know, and I don't know if this will hit better. It'll be better than that. But again, it's also Focus. So they kind of know how to like reach their right audience. And then in terms of the Oscars, like Emma Stone's a 2-time Oscar winner for Best Actress. So I feel like, especially in a year like this, which may be not the strongest field for Best Actress contenders, there's a lot of names, but not a ton of like serious contenders in my estimation. And Katie, you could disagree or agree. I think maybe you agree. I feel like she's like at least got to be taken very seriously as a contender. Jesse Plemons is an actor who has an Oscar nomination, but people really love. And if the two of them can get in, I don't see why it wouldn't also get in for Best Picture. And you could argue Yorgos maybe can get in for director, but I don't know. But I do think it's going to perform pretty well. And I think it's going to be the kind of movie, it's not as crazy as The Substance, but last year, like I remember being at many events and people being like, again, talking about like that, you know, what I really liked, it was like, holy shit, did you see The Substance? That is like, people were like, this is a crazy movie. You got to see it, even older people. And I feel like this year's version of that is Begonia, because it has so many wild twists and kind of is a little crazy. Like you're going to get people being like, wow, you got to kind of, did you guys see Begonia? That's a nutty movie, like that kind of thing. So that alone, that kind of conversation could help it through the race.
It's the kind of thing we come up with over and over again, where it's not just about being a movie that's well liked across the board, but having passion behind you. You know, the way mm-hmm. that you vote for Best Picture, you have this preferential ballot. So you need to have all these kind of first and second place votes. So last year, A Real Pain, Jesse Eisenberg's movie that I think I really liked, a lot of people really liked. I don't know a lot of people who thought it was their favorite movie of the year, as opposed to something like The Substance, which was divisive, but really had those first place votes. Or I'm Still Here, the Brazilian movie that wound up, I think, getting into Best Picture instead of A Real Pain. So if Begonia is something that inspires passion like that, and you know, you have something like House of Dynamite or J. Kelly to pick on Netflix, I guess, that people are respectful of but don't necessarily love, I think siding with Begonia. And I haven't seen it yet, so I'm going to get to it, I think, next week. So hopefully I will see where I land on that spectrum.
Let's jump over to Neon. On my Best Picture list right now, I have Sentimental Value and The Secret Agent, which are both getting a lot of buzz. I tell people what these movies are, because I do not think they are on anybody's radar right now in terms of like normie audiences.
Yeah, neither of them are out yet. Sentimental Value has Elle Fanning and Stellan Skarsgård, who are, you know, decent-ish size stars. So people might have heard of that. It also came in second place at Cannes. And then Neon has the Palme d'Or winner, It Was Just an Accident, which you can probably talk about in a minute. The Sentimental Value is a Norwegian movie. Stellan Skarsgård plays a film director who wants his daughter in real life to star in his movie, and she has her own reasons for not doing it. She's played by Renata Reinsva, who people might have seen in A Different Man last year with Sebastian Stan, or on Presumed Innocent. That's the Apple show she was on.
Yes.
And it's just, it's kind of like a warm but spiky family drama, in the kind that, you know, like Terms of Endearment, that won Best Picture many, many years ago, that we don't really make that much anymore. A lot of it is in English, so I think it's really accessible, even if you're someone who doesn't necessarily sit with subtitles anymore, which I think is increasingly fewer people. And again, Elle Fanning shows up in it, so it's a face that you've seen before. And then The Secret Agent is a Brazilian movie. It stars Wagner Moura, who's also been on an Apple show. He was on a Dope Thief and then also Narcos. So people might be familiar with him. And it's definitely a less accessible movie, I think, than Sentimental Value, although both of them are weirdly like very invested in their respective history of their countries and like secret police and fascism. Mm-hmm. If you saw I'm Still Here last year, you learn more about Brazilian history, which I certainly did. Neon picked up both of those at Cannes. The Secret Agent won Best Director and Best Actor at Cannes, so it also has that big kind of high quality thing behind it. But Neon has a ton of international contenders in addition to these two. And I think It Was Just an Accident, which is Iranian, is the French international submission, is also very strong from them. And they have a bunch of others. So figuring out how they balance it all is a real question.
They have a ton of movies. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. I was just going to say about The Secret Agent, it does feel like there is like a real Brazilian cinema moment right now, which is kind of interesting. I was a big fan of, what's it from last year?
I'm Still Here.
I'm Still Here. Thank you. Yeah. I'm totally blanked. But it does. I don't know how to phrase this question. Where is this coming from? What was it? I did not see a big Brazilian new wave movement coming here, but it definitely feels like something is in the air.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, they've had this interesting political situation where Jair Bolsonaro, who was their kind of Trump-like president, was in power for a while, and I think really froze out a lot of cultural production there. That's something that Kleber Mendonça-Filho, the director of Secret Agent, and Wagner Moura talked to me about when I interviewed them in Toronto in our plug our video studio, Chris, where you and
there
I got
go.
To
I was going
to
say, great plug. This is great. He's so good at the plugs.
We got to do a bunch of interviews there, and I don't know that much about Brazilian politics, but it seemed clear to them that I think for a couple years, if you were a leftist in Brazil, it was hard to make movies the way that you want to. I think Brazil funds film in the way that most countries in the world do, but we don't. So that, I think, has been a cause of, you know, celebration for a lot of them. It's been interesting for people to look back on the 70s, which is what I'm Still Here and The Secret Agent are both about, when there was a military dictatorship there. But Brazil's a huge country. It's got a huge film and TV industry. It has a lot of talent working within it. And I think as more American audiences are willing to watch movies with subtitles, there's been a kind of an international content boom here. And so we're kind of more open to it, and they are also able to make more of it. And I think those two things are converging, would be my guess.
Yeah. And Christopher, the Iranian cinema has always been, there's always been kind of this, great movement of Iranian filmmakers. It Was Just an Accident is the kind of big release out of Iran this year. The director has been making the rounds. Do we think that is in pretty strong contention for either a Best Picture nomination or, you know, Best International Feature win?
I mean, I have it in Best Picture, Best International Feature, and Best Director for Jafar Panahi. Katie also talked to, I'll plug the video series from TIFF. She just talked to all these international auteurs. I think it is a strong contender. And again, we were talking before about how Netflix has so many movies. I mean, Neon has literally, that's three movies right there that we're talking about. The Secret Agent, Sentimental Value, which I do think will get in. And It Was Just an Accident. All three, I think, are real possibilities. I only have two in at the moment. I don't have Secret Agent. But if you told me Secret Agent got in, again, like we're saying, like in terms of like the boom of Brazilian cinema, I think I would believe it. But we're also, the other thing, the unspoken thing here is like the, like in terms of the Academy, it's way more international than it was, you know, than five mm-hmm. to 10 years ago. I think it's a quarter of the Academy is now internationally based. And so that group of voters has really significantly changed the types of movies that get in. And you saw that like last year, like Katie was saying, obviously, like I'm Still Here had a lot of passion, but I think maybe 10 years prior, a Searchlight movie like A Real Pain would have easily gotten in, right? Like in terms of like, oh, this is just like a classic Searchlight Best Picture nominee where it's going to get picture, supporting actor, and screenplay, and that's it. And like it'll win the one. And it didn't get in because, you know, for whatever reason, maybe the, even though it was an internationally based story, the troubles of two, like, you know, East Coast based cousins in that case did not really amount to a hill of beans for international voters versus like the political commentary of I'm Still Here. So I do think that we've seen that change a lot. And Neon has aggressively like courted that demographic in the Academy. Certainly you could argue Anora, which was a Palm winner. And even though it's an American story, was had like a probably a large footprint of international support as well.
And Neon has really, really committed themselves to Cannes pickups, and especially they've distributed the last six Palme d'Or winners in a row, starting with Parasite, which obviously worked out very well for them. And they've got two more Cannes movies this year that, I mean, they could seriously have the full international feature lineup because they have No Other Choice out of South Korea from Park Chan-wook, who is another hugely acclaimed international auteur whose Oscar moment has never really come. And I still kind of keep wondering if that movie's going to surge because it's really fun. It's like, kind of like a comedy, dark comedy kind of thing. And then they have Surratt from Spain, which I haven't seen yet. But Chris talked to the extremely handsome director of Surratt. Not to make it all about looks, but you know,
he's very good looking. He's very good looking man. And that movie is also crazy and has the Begonia factor where you're just going to be like, you're going to be hearing people about this, this movie, Surratt, being like, wow, did you see that? Is a crazy movie. Like it almost, you will never, you could look at the log line and never even guess. It's about a father and his son who are looking for their daughter who has been missing in a rave culture, and they're in the desert, and then it just really goes spins in crazy directions. So I do think that is a contender as well, probably for international feature.
You know, for some real inside baseball in Surratt, I keep asking for a link for it because I haven't seen it yet. And they're like, no, we're going to set you up a screening so you can see it in theaters. So
it is definitely a theater movie.
That's a sign of, you know, hope that, you know, that the distributor has in it, that they think it can hit big.
That's a big show of faith.
I know. Living in an inconvenient location for them to show me movies. When anyone sets anything up for me, it's nice.
This also happened. So I am not nearly as big a deal as Katie Rich of The Yankler.
However, A24
did do something similar for me with Eddington. I was like, I can't make the screen. They were like, well, when can you make a screening? I was like, Wednesday.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, good. We'll do it. And and that movie, unfortunately, has kind of fallen off the chatter. I think it is great. I think it's one of the best movies of the year. It hasn't really made the award season cut, I don't think. A24 seems to be kind of putting its hopes now in Marty Supreme, which does seem to be their big movie. The Smashing Machine as well. It's funny, you have the two Safdie brothers going head-to-head in their kind of outsider sports weirdo movies. I kind of admired The Smashing Machine. I don't know that it entirely worked. I gave it a thumbs up. Good. It's Dwayne John's very good in it. But it does feel like all of the momentum now for A24 is behind Marty Supreme, the Timothée Chalamet ping pong movie.
Without a doubt, I would say. Yeah, I've seen Marty Supreme and Smashing Machine. And I would say, like, if you watch Smashing Machine, now you like the movie, Sonny, so I will not, I'm not trash the movie. We're not here to trash movies. We're just talking about it.
We're here to celebrate movies.
We just want people to see them, for God's sake.
Go see the movies, even Smashing Machine. I would say, if you watch Smashing Machine, you're like, wow, the guys who co-director of Uncut Gems made a little bit of a sleepy movie, a slower, more contemplative movie. And you're like, I wonder how that happens. Then you watch Marty Supreme and you're like, oh, okay. Like, this is, so Josh is like the juice of this in terms of the momentum of the movie. No disrespect to Benny. I think, like, in what their aesthetics are, Josh is the holy cow, let's keep move guy. And Benny is more of the contemplative guy, it seems. So Marty Supreme is like really like through the roof kind of momentum.
So what you're saying is that this is like watching Tragedy of Macbeth and Honey Don't back to back. The separate Coen.
Correct.
Movies.
It is a little bit like that, but I would say both. Like, I'm not a fan of either of those, so I'd say like these are more successful, Smash Machine and Marty Supreme, than those. But yes, I think it is a good thing, and I love, honestly, like, I want these direct, like, just as a tangent, I want the brothers, all these brothers, to get back together and make movies together. But I do think it's interesting when you get to see the separation of these two, the duos, and see what part of the movies that you past liked, be like, oh, so that is actually, this is sensibility versus the other sensibility. And I always find that really fascinating.
Katie, do we think Timothy Chalamet has at the very least an actor nomination locked up for Marty Supreme? And could this, you know, he's now been a nominee. He's got the bona fides and the creds. Does this get him through to the winner's podium?
Yeah, I mean, I'm more invested in Best Actor, I think, than any other category this year. I think it's such a deep bench, like, even when you've got something like Dwayne Johnson in a movie like Smashing Machine that's fallen down in buzz a little bit. So I would say that Timothée Chalamet, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Michael B. Jordan for centers are all pretty locked into their three slots, and it's a race for the other two. And I just love the showdown between Chalamet and DiCaprio, because Chalamet is so clearly modeling his career after DiCaprio. Like, they really are. It's kind of a generational handoff between them. And as we have seen in reality, a lot of times older generations don't want to let go. So it might be a second Oscar for DiCaprio, which I would really support. I think he's phenomenal in One Battle After Another. I haven't seen Marty Supreme yet. And Chalamet has the youth thing working against him, where young actors just have a really hard time getting that Oscar win. Adrien Brody still has the record as being the youngest. Chalamet would have beat his record if he'd won last year. And Chalamet's got a campaign with the old school people more. Like, he didn't do that last year. He went on College Game Day. He sold the movie really well. It was incredibly charming. He won the SAG Award. That doesn't count for nothing. But I think the people who are going to be the most resistant about giving a 29-year-old Best Actor are the people who are going to be at those, like, meet and greet handshake events in LA. And Chalamet hadn't done that for A Complete Unknown. And I'm curious if he changes his strategy this time.
Yeah. Let's talk Michael B. Jordan in centers real quick. Just one last individual movie here, because it's one of these things where, once again, I can't quite pin down how real the buzz, how real the award season buzz is for it versus how much I want it to be real. Cause I feel like this is a movie that should get 8 or 9 nominations. And I think it'll probably get one for Best Picture because of the expanded field. If Michael B. Jordan doesn't get one for his dual role, I will be outraged on his behalf. But then I don't know. Ryan Coogler, that's a director is a very tough field this year, a very tough field every year. I don't know. Screenwriting, I don't know. That's a tough field. And there's multiple supporting actresses. I don't know. What do you guys make of Sinners? Is this the big mainstream hit of the year that is going to be like the big mainstream Oscar movie?
Well, Wicked's still coming, so don't forget that. I don't think anyone's tipping it to win Best Picture, but it's still in the mix. And Avatar, I'm not letting go of Avatar. But I think the campaign infrastructure is there for Sinners. They're getting like an honorary award at the Gotham Awards in early December, which is always strong evidence if they've like invented an award to give you that that you have people who are really willing to put your own town. I'm about to do a story about The Crafts, talking to some of the people who made that. Like, the award strategists are working hard on that. I think all evidence points to Michael B. Jordan being willing to get out there for the movie. Ryan Coogler famously is not an Academy member. He has turned down the invitation. So I think he is an interesting question mark about how much he will be out there campaigning. But if his main competition is Paul Thomas Anderson, who also doesn't seem to want to campaign that much, it might not be a big deal. I mean, my question, and Chris, I can hand this to you too, is I think Sinners is a massive hit in the United States. It's a very important cultural movie here. I don't think it made as big an impact overseas. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussions about how Warner Brothers probably didn't market it properly, and a lot of old assumptions about how Black talent performs overseas has been debunked. But anyway, this the point that we're in now, it's a very American movie regardless. So I don't know how the international vote will factor into that. But I think when it comes to American voters, I think Sinners is pretty high on the list.
I agree with that. And I think a couple of things that we were talking about earlier in terms of like we were saying, like, how do you predict these things? And do you want to like advocate for your faves and stuff? I think like you were saying there, Sonny, about like Michael B. Jordan, there is a like we've been like kind of like on that to be like, he could get snubbed. And I think enough people are saying that you're like would be so outraged by it that it will help him not get snubbed. This is remind me of this on January 22nd when he does get snubbed. But I would say, like, I do think like people are more aware because we've seen in the past, like, certainly I would go back to Barbie, certainly is one, or like, you know, like even a few years before when it was like Viola Davis missing for Woman King. Like, these are nominations that people took for granted.
Woman King wasn't a best picture
contender. I'm saying it wasn't. Okay. Well, it kind of was, but not as much as Barbie or Sinners. But I'm just saying, like, in terms of like people being like so outraged that an actor got snubbed. Now we're aware of that, I think, in the culture. And I do think like voters are aware of that too, because they read like internet, the online is Twitter's not real and the online world is fake, but at the same time, you're still reading it. And like, these people are still like aware of the conversation, maybe not the very, very old, Academy members, but certainly a lot of the newer ones or know what's going on. So I would be like heartened for Michael B. Jordan to get in. I think internationally, we'll see how Sinners plays. But like Katie was saying, they're bringing it back in a big way. It's going to be re-released in theaters over Halloween weekend when there's nothing out over, basically, in terms of like wide release. They're doing K-pop Demon Hunters again.
What a double feature.
I've already got my tickets for K-pop Demon Hunters.
Can we bring the kids to both, Chris?
For fifth time.
My 10-year-old daughter is going to have a great night. We're going to do K-pop Demon Hunters and then Sinners. It's going
to
be
I can't wait to see K-pop Demon Hunters in the theater. Can't wait.
Going again. But I would say, like, you know, that's good. That'll be good. That'll be a good headline for it, because I could see it doing pretty well in IMAX and like kind of like kind of reigniting the conversation. Like Katie said, the fake Gotham Award, not fake, but you know, like, you know, like a presentation of a Gotham Award. Sure. These are all things that'll keep it in the conversation. I don't know how, in terms of its nominations, like, I think a lot of the crafts will get in. We've seen Ryan Coogler's movies like Black Panther and Wakanda Forever both did pretty well with below the line nominations. And this movie, I feel like, will like, he has had trouble breaking in above the line, but I do think Michael B. Jordan, I think screenplay, director, like you're saying, Sonny, is really tough, and who knows, but I kind of could see him getting in too, because it was such a vision, a directorial vision that I think people really responded to, but we'll see. I'm like pretty bullish on it, despite the potential red flags throughout, and it's a genre movie and all that stuff.
He's also like the only name brand director under 40 in at all. Like, Greta is older than 40 now at this point, I think, would be the only other possibility. I was also going to throw out that I got an email promoting some Q&A's happening for Hedda, the Nia DaCosta movie that I don't think is quite part of this conversation, but he'll be moderating a Q&A with her in San Francisco. So he's getting out there visibly, even if it's not kind of the familiar self-promotion, which I think is actually a pretty smart spot for him to be in.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully, again, don't forget about Sinners voters who are listening to this, all the voters who are listening. All right, so Katie, when you called me out in a newsletter the other day because I have Rose Byrne above Jesse Buckley in the actress category, which I think is, you're probably right too, frankly, given the way that I've seen every conversation about Hamnet go down. Aside from that horrible blunder, what else on my list here is raising your hackles?
I'm going to go back and correct myself first, though, and say that the Daniels, Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheiner, are both under 40 as well. So just due credit to the Daniels. I love that you have Carrie Condon for Train Dreams. I don't know that she would be my top pick in that supporting category. I think she's really wonderful in it. It's a small part and in a small movie. I do think you having Emily Blunt still on your supporting list is crazy. I don't think that's happening. And
probably
in any world. I mean, the thing is, like, I want outlier choices. Like, you know, I think if you didn't have Sean Penn on your supporting actor ballot, you would be kind of ignoring reality. But I think putting Andrew Scott in for Blue Moon is totally valid. Like, there's so many spots that we don't ever know what's going to happen. And, you know, you go back to a couple years ago, and I don't think anyone's best actor predictions, you know, 100% correct, would have had both Bill Nighy and Paul Mescal in best actor, but then they both got nominated. So I think when you have those like 3, 4, 5 slots kind of getting past the ones who seem really locked in place, go be worried about it. Like, there's so much room to play with.
See, I'm surprised you went with that one, calling out that one instead of Delroy Lindo, who I feel like Delroy Lindo should be getting more buzz. Delroy Lindo is a little bit like the Amy Madigan of the male supporting actor category for me, because I wouldn't say he makes Sinners work, but he definitely gives Sinners a different vibe than it would have had without him. And I think he is so good in that role. He's just filled with, he's funny, he's full of pathos, etc. And I feel like nobody's giving him his due. We need more Delroy Lindo.
I will say action. That he is getting a tribute at the Denver Film Festival. Again, plug, Chris and I are going to be there, not talking to him. But what he has in his favor is being a Best Picture contender. And what we've seen over the last couple of years is so many more acting nominees will come from Best Picture nominees. It doesn't ever, you know, there's an outlier or two in there, but it's just much harder for people to take you seriously if you are not in a movie that they're already seeing to consider for all the other categories. So that's where Delroy Lindo has an edge there, I think.
I'll give you two more on Delroy Lindo. I agree with you, Sonny. He should have more shine because, like, if you remember for Defy Bloods, he was like a film Twitter fave, right? People were like, nominate Delroy Lindo, like, and got the merch and stuff, and then he got snubbed and everybody was so mad. And now he's in it, like Katie's saying, a legitimate Best Picture contender in a supporting category where maybe it's arguably not easier to get nominated, but they're more accepting of, like, fan fave nominations, and nobody's out there stumping for him. So I do find that, like, ironic, I guess I would say. The other thing he has going for him versus in Sinners, and we could talk, like, we didn't really like the supporting actress category is loaded because you have multiple contenders from these Best Picture movies. So like Sentimental Value has Elle Fanning and this newer actress to North American audiences who is Inga Ilias.
Ibsdotter.
What is it?
Inga Ibsdotter Lilius or
Inga Ibsdotter Lilius. Sure.
Yeah.
So like that, those are two. You have like Tiana Taylor and Regina Hall from One Battle After Another. You have Odessa Azion and Gwyneth Paltrow from Artie Supreme. So you have all these like really like ton of contenders. And for Sinners, you could arguably have Winnie Misako and Haley Steinfeld. And then Delroy really is kind of on his own. No disrespect to Jack O'Connell, who I really like in the movie, and Miles Caton, who I thought was a great find. Like Delroy is like the focus to me of the supporting guys in that movie, and he has the one great scene when they're in the car and he's recounting his friend being lynched, which is just like a real show-stopping moment in the movie. And like all that together, and like Katie saying it's a top Best Picture contender, I do think he should be way more seriously considered than he is. That said, I don't have him predicted again.
Sonny, but I did realize you left out Stellan Skarsgård, which I feel like is crazy. Stellan Skarsgård is getting nominated for Sentimental Value. He's wonderful in it. Justice for his performance in Andor. We're finally going to make it right.
I think that's again, this is one of these movies where I have not seen it, and it is on my radar, but not. We should start. We're starting it today. We're starting the Delroy Lindo.
Nominate Delroy Lindo. Get the swag.
Justice for Delroy Lindo.
Get the swag back out.
All right. All right. Well, I don't know. What do you guys? All right. So, exit question here, I guess, is what do you think looks like the actual what's the favorite to win the most statues? Let's just go with that. Very basic question, Katie. Favorite to win the highest total number of statues at the Oscars in 2026.
I think it's the easy and obvious answer is One Battle After Another. It's just got so much craft to it. The cinematography is amazing. I would love for Johnny Greenwood to finally win an Oscar for his score. There's a casting Oscar for the first time this year, and there's amazing ensembles. We were just talking about Sinners and all the supporting players, but the way that One Battle After Another has like standout performances from Sean Penn and Benicio del Toro, and then also that woman working in the police station who tells Leo he has diabetes, and like every single
so
character
good.
In that movie is fantastic. I think it's going to win that in a walk. You know, it's got crafts competition from Sinners, Wicked, Avatar, all these things coming. But yeah, I'm pretty confident that's going to be the biggest statue getter of them all.
I'll go contrarian and I'll say Wicked, because I think last time it won two Oscars, right, for costume design and production design. I think it could win those again. Add in Ariana Grande for supporting actress, because she's basically a lead in the second act of the movie or the play or the musical and like whatever. It could win casting, because while we don't know what they're going to do with that category, I could see them being like, we really loved this last year. I don't know. I think it's got like, you know, costume production design could have a song in there, because there's a couple of original songs this time around.
You're not gonna sit here and say you think Wicked's gonna win the song Oscar. You know that's not gonna happen.
I mean, what if people aren't as excited about Golden as like the regular audiences are?
Chris,
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Go
I'm
see K-pop Demon Hunters in theaters again, and then report.
You know,
back.
I wanted to win Best Picture, but I mean, like, you know, I could say One Battle. It's Katie's probably right, but I do think Wicked. We don't know how that's gonna play, and like, yeah, like the. It could go two ways to me, where it's like, you already like, we already love the first one and this one's not as good, and like move on, or we're like, oh, we really do want to celebrate it. So I'll say Wicked, but I think Katie's probably right.
I think if you asked me to say, will Wicked win three Oscars or zero, I would say zero. Not that I think it's that it will, but like that one feels more likely to me. You know what I mean? We'll see.
So over under a 2.5, you're taking.
I guess so. Win. I'm no good at betting, but yeah.
All right. Let me, one actual exit question this time. The casting Oscar, this is the first year for the casting Oscar, right? This is a new category, and it's interesting because again, like a lot of the times you look at a movie and you're like, okay, here are the big names, and that's great. You look at something like The Smashing Machine, right? When you're like, okay, well, you got Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt. Okay, that's. But that movie also does have some pretty interesting kind of supporting casting, like non-actor roles, non-actor performers filling pretty key roles. Again, it's not a great movie. I don't think it's going to win best casting. How do you judge this as a voter? How are the voters looking at this? Is it just like, this movie has the most number of performances that make me say, oh yeah, that character? Like, how does it? I don't even know what the criterion is.
I think it's a great question, and I think casting directors are very circumspect by nature. They know a lot that they're not telling us, and they're never going to be like, well, the director really wanted this star, I didn't, so I, like, you know, they're not going to spill the tea that would make you understand how their job works. And I think it varies from movie to movie. You know, they had to search high and low to find Chase Infinity to star in One Battle After Another. That's a huge lead role that the director couldn't just, like, sign up, the way that, you know, Leo was not cast by the casting directors for that movie, but Chase Infinity was. And so I think there's definitely the risk of it being more like a best ensemble award. Like, you can imagine Conclave being a strong contender for casting last year, even though I imagine a lot of those actors were kind of like brought in and less through the casting directors. But I think that the breadth of the cast is probably a good way to do it. Like, if you like the person who's in the 20th major role as much as you do in the first, that's probably good evidence that it's well cast. What do you think, Chris?
I'm hoping that's what they end up doing with this. I mean, we'll see. Because I assume, well, obviously, like, the branch is nominated, right? So, like, the casting directors will probably nominate the right people. But I'll be curious to see in terms of, like, the win. Like, if it's Wicked versus One Battle, I agree. Like, One Battle, you go down the line beyond, like, obviously, Leo and Sean Penn and Benicio del Toro and Regina Hall and Tiana Taylor, who are mostly recognizable actors, I would say, like, in the aggregate there. But like, and even beyond Chase, you have like the interrogator, I forget the actor's name.
Yeah.
That guy rules. Like, he's like a real military consultant that all of a sudden is in the movie as like an actor and is just like amazing. And like Katie said, the woman who is helping Leo, and like the guy sitting at the taco stand who was like, whatever, and he says he had the taco shirt on, or whatever it is. Like, I'm like, all of these actors are just unbelievable, and they had so much depth and color to the movie. The skateboarders,
also supposed to.
It's like, you go down the line. So I'm like, that should really win casting versus like Wicked, where it's like, oh, the eighth role is Michelle Yeoh. Like, okay, great. Like, thank you for putting like an Oscar winning legend in the movie. That's awesome. So we'll see how the whole Academy votes, but I do think the casting directors will have a sharp eye. Like, to me, like Marty Supreme, you were saying, I'm not surprised that the Smashing Machine as well, in terms of like the similarities. And I didn't Google this, so before I say this, but I wonder if it's also the same woman who did Marty Supreme did Smashing Machine. But that's the same kind of thing where it's like a lot of non-actors. You have Kevin O'Leary in there from Shark Tank versus like Gwyneth Paltrow and versus like all like Abel Ferrara is in there. This is like a Penn Jillette has a role in Marty Supreme. It just is like a real bunch of a motley crew. And I do find it like really fascinating when you can watch a movie like that versus, no disrespect to something like Wicked I keep harping on, but I'm like, you know, it's like interesting to see that. So I'm assuming the casting directors will do the right thing, and then we'll see what the whole Academy does when they vote for the winner.
You know what's so great about casting directors too is they see so many movies. Like, they just have to see stuff to be able to like check out actors and know what's going on. You know, they're not watching them with an eye toward crafts, but in terms of knowing what's in the field and having seen all the nominees, I bet you anything the casting branch sees more of the nominees than anybody else. So I trust their taste kind of implicitly.
They probably have a great email listserv too, where they're like, I tried to get him.
Oh, are you kidding? They know them, and the hair and makeup people are the ones who know absolutely everything, and they'll never tell. And I wish they would even just tell me. I won't tell anybody else. But they are good at their jobs because they won't tell me.
And I Googled it. It is Jennifer Venditti, who is the casting director of Marty Supreme and Smashing Machine. Nice. And she did a great job in both. So we'll see how she can get nominated for one, hopefully.
All right, we're running along here. I'll let you guys go.
Running along with us? I can't believe it.
I do usually have an exit question. I always ask if there's anything we didn't discuss that you think folks should know about the Oscars or Ankler pundits or whatever. Is there anything else you guys want to plug? If there's more videos or interviews, we could, you know.
Literally hours more content about the Oscars that Chris and I talk about regularly. So there's the Prestige Junkie podcast that Chris is on often. And then the two of us together do Prestige Junkie After Party, which is a bonus paid tier. It's $5 a month. You get access to weekly extra episodes, video versions, occasional Substack Lives. As we record this, Chris and I tonight are planning to do a watch along of Something's Gotta Give in honor of Diane Keaton. We both rewatched it to prepare and had the best time, so it's going to be really fun. If this was just kind of whetting your appetite to learn more about the true nerdy stuff about Oscar season, Prestige Junkie afterparty.substack.com is the place to be.
Perfect. I'll do one plug, anglerpundits.com, so mm-hmm. you can see Sunny's great picks. These are great picks, Sunny, and all of our picks as well. So
we're gonna get this Delroy Lindo thing sorted out.
We're gonna give you credit if it happens.
Starts here and now. All right. Katie, Christopher, thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And my name, again, is Sunny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and we will be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.